Welcome to episode 464 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we feature a wonderful conversation with Emmy Award-winning writer, director, producer, among other things, Marissa Nalevenko. And we discuss playing in the woods as a child, using a rotary television with just three channels, and working with Amanda Gorman, PBS Kids, how the Emmy arrived in the mail, being brave, scary things, the honesty of children and family traditions. A wonderful conversation with Marissa Nalevenko this go around. We have an EW essay titled American Dream, and we debut a new essayist on the program, Marnie Azzarelli, daughter of actor extraordinaire Dominic Azzarelli. She is something of a force. I think you'll see it when you hear her pop culture essay titled Holding Out for a Villain. We have an EW poem called Butterfly. And of course, all of this will be infused, imbued with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It is so nice to be with you. Let's get to it then. Episode 464 of Troubadours and Raconteurs.
Will you?
American Dream. Incredible Buddha magic and Catholic savage, with thick fog warming the mountainside. She takes care of herself with perfumed lotion and warm balm. He smokes marijuana and tobacco to help stake his claim, concocting potions and notions regarding who is right and who is wrong, who is to blame, who are the weak and who are the strong. And there is still this debilitating shame just the same. The morning dogs bark a song into the melody formed in the bird trees and bushes that will still be here after we are long gone. White-tailed rabbits come out of their burrows among the deep roots and smooth rock beneath us. They hop around town. The paper boy is an endangered species, and the coal crackers still have black lung. The notion of an American dream is as far-flung as is this piece esoteric, while coming undone right before our eyes, right under our nose, illuminated by the sun. The poetry, the prose, the dialogue, the tanks and bombs and factories, my $12 shirt and your paisley silk green and pink skirt accentuates a figure so beautiful and strong and sensual and mine in this heart and mind. Do I have a soul? What is its goal? And time is the only measure that seems real and true as it passes through me and you. What are you going to do? Is this thing day in and day out all about love and leisure and talk and tears and selfish fears? The piano smells of fresh varnish and stain. The carpeted living room of nervous urine and mundane hope of riches and fame. Tickle the keys until a genuine melody echoes with the breeze through the rain and wind and calm. And clear blue sky goes on forever, beneath and above and within the throng. And this is your song.
Fueling all this dark, ah. tasting bitter morning. Ultramarine, feel my fate rushing.
Right at 12:45.
Oh yeah, I'm very punctual.
Fantastic.
Marissa Nalivenko, I presume.
Yes, that's a great pronunciation.
Well, thank you for being on the program. Really appreciate it.
I thank you for having me. It's an honor.
And well, that's nice to hear. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Let's share with the listeners a little background information before we get started. Marissa Nalivenko is an Emmy Award-winning writer, director, and producer with over 20 years of television and media experience. She has worked alongside top-level talent at national broadcast networks such as PBS, Lifetime Television, the Discovery Channel, HGTV, Animal Planet, and National Geographic. Troubadours and Rock on Tours is very happy to have on the program Marissa Nalivenko. And, you know, your Emmy, that's a big thing I want to get into, though maybe we should start with a little background about you. Like, how did you get into television? Was this always a dream of yours since you were a little kid?
Sure. It's kind of funny. We grew up on a dirt road in the middle of the Poconos, and my mom really was against watching television. So... And we had one of those old school rotary TV sets that only got like three channels. And during the summer, so instead of, watching your cartoons, she would just push us outside, right? So we loved being outside. I had two sisters, and so we would play in the woods and make a lot of forts. But I actually didn't watch that much television until we would go to my grandmother's house, and she had cable and, all the shiny different channels. And I really, it was at that time when I was like laying on the floor of her living room, my grandmother's parlor, that I fell in love with television. And in particular, I fell in love with commercials. And I just loved, it was sort of like a light switch, but I loved how they were making me feel a certain way. And I remember like actually crying over something silly, like an AT&T commercial at the time. And I couldn't believe that this little 30-second video was making me feel something. And I really fell in love with that. I fell in love with the idea of creating powerful content and important content that could make people feel something.
That's great. You know, it's mm-hmm. and you decided not to go to E Street, but to go to Sesame Street, basically.
Right. Well, that you know that took a little while to get there, but so then I mean I could continue going. My first experience actually was at the local Fox TV station, where I think I was about 8 or 10 at the time, and I did some stand up commercials for them. Just promoting the next kid series. So I think my mom knew somebody at the station, but I started doing, I did like a few commercials there. And then I went to school. I went to the University of Pennsylvania and I studied communications and marketing and, you know, really learned about mass communication, not so much the production side, but really at that point I was really thinking more towards like the marketing mm-hmm. and the commercials. But I then, for a summer internship, came back to that same Fox TV station and started creating some content for them. It was just a fantastic experience. And that was really where I learned a lot of my chops and got my feet wet and just fell in love with creating content at 20, really at the age of 20.
Just a kid. Just a kid.
Really? Yeah.
You know, editing is such I don't know if it's underappreciated by the masses, art and craft, mm-hmm. don't you think? I mean, without a good editor, your work, your productions would be nothing.
Oh, 100%. 100%. In fact, you really are only as good. It's a partnership. You're only as good as that editor who is, you know, creating, putting your idea and making it come to life. I just don't have that skill set to edit. I think, I find it, and it's such an ever-changing industry, really, with the technology. But editing is really the other. It's the yin to the yang of the producing and the writing.
So you fancy yourself more so producer, writer, director, perhaps, and
correct. Yeah.
And when you get to that editing component, is it out of your hands or are you there every step of the way or looking at what they've done afterwards?
Well, now I'm very fortunate. I'm about, 20 years into this. So I'm able to really work with a handful of editors who I trust completely and who know me and know, you know, what I write on paper, and they take it to a totally different level. So now I like to hand it off and give very little direction because we have this, you know, there's really a strong layer of trust there. And I think, I have a couple of editors who come to mind, they make my work better. So, I think when you're starting out, right, you're sort of going, you're learning together. And I spend a lot of time sitting in the edit bays, unsure, not really sure what I wanted, a little timid. Mm-hmm. Kind of looking towards editors to you know help guide the content to the right place based on you know whatever the mission was or whoever our audience is, but now I feel like after a couple years under my belt, really having that partnership with editors really just sort of takes the work to the best place it could be.
Well, and speaking about the best place it could be, a higher sort of level of I don't know the right word, art, craft. You won an Emmy, and
I did.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's something I'm sure you're very happy about and very proud mm-hmm. of. And you won it working with someone at the time who wasn't really well known, but now is
exactly
should I guess is a household name or should be Amanda Gorman.
Right.
Tell us a bit about that. How you two connected? What was it like working together? And when you saw her on inauguration day, what were you thinking?
Sure. You know, it's going to sound cliche, but it's like being at the right place at the right time. And it just, that's really what happened here. So just backpedaling a little bit, the project that Amanda was a part of was called the PBS Kids Talk About Race and Racism. And we produced this show in the summer of 2020. So it was the height of the pandemic. It was also during the middle of the protests and all of the riots and the Black Lives Matter movement. And I was a part of a PBS Kids team that that really, really wanted to do something to help support our families, really. I mean, PBS Kids is really about supporting families across the country, right? And mm-hmm. providing educational resources and really trying to represent the underrepresented. So all this was going on. It was a really tumultuous time, and we rallied and decided to try to film, to get. We had about 8 families come to a studio in Northern Virginia, and we filmed. I think there were 3 from 4-year-olds to 9, 10-year-olds and their parents and caregivers, and we talked about race and racism. It was very sensitive topics. It was very real conversations. And, it was beautiful. It was beautiful and such an honor to be able to tell their stories and tell their experiences. And really with the whole goal of being able to model, and help other families have these very difficult conversations around their dinner tables. That's the goal.
Yeah.
So we're filming on set, and this is a whole team of maybe 10 people, and we said it's such a serious subject matter. We need to have someone really ground it. We need a host. We need someone who can really usher these conversations and provide extra. Craft the message around these family conversations. And so at the time, I don't know if you know John Krasinski, who used to be from The Office.
Yes, of course.
Okay, so he had during the pandemic, he had this show called Some Good News.
Yeah, I loved it. I used to watch it all the time. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, okay. So I was really hooked on that. And he had featured Amanda Gorman. He had a whole episode on graduation and Amanda, he featured her, and then he had her recite an original poem, and she was just, I fell in love with her, as did all of America. Right. But at that time she was still just on the cusp of really exploding and becoming huge. And then I think I had seen her in a United Way commercial. And so we were on set and we were batting around a couple ideas of having a host. And I said, what do you guys think about Amanda Gorman? So we watched some of her videos and we're like, let's go for it. Let's try. Right. Let's try. Let's see if she's available. And she was available. So, we filmed her, she's based in LA. And, at the time we were not, PBS had a freeze on any travel
because of the pandemic, basically.
Yeah, because of the pandemic. So again, this was before testing, before it was a scary time. So, but I had a great DP, a great crew that's actually based out of Madison, Wisconsin, and they flew out to LA for me, and we did a virtual shoot, which was another never been done before. And so we actually met Amanda Gorman that way. I never actually had a chance to meet her in person, again, because of the pandemic. But we filmed with her via Zoom. So that was wild.
That's fantastic. And, my compliments. You have a good eye. You discovered someone just by flipping through the channels. Who you knew would have something to offer. And that's probably why you're at the top of the heap, because you have a good eye, you have good instincts.
Thank you. Yeah. But again, it really goes back to right place, right time, supportive team, right? I'm one of many, and really being able to sell that to our the senior management to say, let's go for it. Let's take this risk. So, but I do feel extremely fortunate that that I was, again, in the right place at the right time.
And she was, I don't know if she still has this title, the National Youth Poet Laureate, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And I think that's how our first lady, Joe Biden, discovered her. I don't know if maybe she saw her at a poetry reading or something to that effect.
I don't know. I mean, she's very involved in education. So I think she also has a keen eye for talent.
She does.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that particular program with Amanda, that aired initially.
Sure. That aired. So that was a broadcast special that aired in October of 2020. And
did you know at that point, well, this thing has some legs?
Oh, I knew. We knew it. I knew it. Yeah, it was one of those things that and I feel like I'm getting a little emotional over it, but I felt so fortunate. All the right parts, everything just came into place. And it was such a powerful piece that we created that I knew we were doing good. And it kind of goes back to why I got into this industry in the first place. I felt like we were creating something that would help people and make people feel something and do good. So, right after we put the whole thing together. And again, we were pushing it in PBS, in the PBS world, things usually take, in order to create content, it takes a really long time. Like we're talking months, sometimes years. But this was all, we greenlit this mid-July and produced it the end of July. We found our families, produced it the end of July, filmed with Amanda in August, and delivered it in September. So it was just a fast track. And everybody, we're talking, you know, late nights, sometimes no sleep, and really everybody was just at the top of their game to put this together.
And then you get an Emmy nomination.
Then we did. Yep. Yeah, we did. Let's see, that was 2021. It feels like 2020 and 2021.
Or one long year.
It's very hard to distinguish it. But so last year, right. So last year we got our Emmy nom, and everybody, just through the roof, excited. And, again, just very proud, very, very happy to bring this to the network. PBS is known for just really, you know, quality material and content. So it was on par, but this was very, this was close to the heart. So we were just so happy about it.
And now has that translated, winning the Emmy ultimately, for this production, has it translated into giving you more, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? Juice, so to speak, where, hey, you can do what you like. Please bring us some more of that.
Oh, I wish, right? It's still public broadcasting. So we are really, everything is grant based and our budgets are really non-existent, but, since then we have produced another, and we are in the middle of producing another round of PBS Kids Talk About segments. And we actually just pushed one live about the COVID pandemic. So it's a series of families talking about what we're all going through and what the last 2 years were like for their families. So that's another powerful video.
You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest.
But yeah, you know, it's actually, in a way, it's kind of like, okay, back to normal, you know, like back to doing what's important. And it's, for us, it's work, right? We're working to create educational content for kids. And so this was wonderful and it was shiny. And I have this Emmy award just right next to me. And it reminds me that, yep, you know, you can do it. But at the end of the day, it's really about, staying close to helping families and creating good content for kids.
Exactly. I mean, if you start getting all egotistical and such, you're not going to be doing anything worthwhile.
And my kids would make sure that never happened. In fact, this is a little bit of a segue, but so the Emmy Awards were virtual, right? So we didn't get to do the red carpet. And that was fine. We actually had a little party here, and my mom came and my family and friends, and we got all dressed up and watched it and watched it live. But the Emmy actually arrived, maybe a month later, and my kids were really excited, and we open up this box, and it's a box inside of a box. And it's like, it's sitting in this, you know, this foam, this velvet foam, and I pull it out and it's shiny and it's gorgeous. And my kids immediately take out their Legos and start playing with it. And they're like sliding down the side of the dress of this and like hanging off of the globe. We keep it real.
That's good. It's good stuff. That's important. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what about, you know, some of the reactions you witnessed when having children in a room discussing some of these really poignant, deep issues, emotional, psychological, intellectual? Mm-hmm. Were you moved by what you experienced in terms of how the kids were reacting and responding?
Yeah, you know what? I was so moved, we've covered a lot of topics, race and racism being a really important one. But we've talked about scary things and being brave. What does it mean to be brave? And feelings, emotions, and I always love working with kids because they have the ability to really channel what's going on in their mind. And they're very, very good about just telling you how it is. And it could be funny. It could be, it could be startling, but it could be very moving. So a lot of these kids have done a really great job of expressing what they're going through. And then likewise, I think seeing parents, the conversations and the realness and their relationship. I mean, that to me is always so beautiful. Just seeing a relationship between a dad and his daughter and the way they're able to communicate and connect. Mm-hmm. And then to be able to show that to other families who maybe need, you know, are looking for a way to connect over a particular topic, or how do I even start talking about racism, or, you know, bridge the gap between, handling feelings and handling emotions. That has been a true, true privilege, really, to be able to show these families in a real way.
Wonderfully stated. We're talking to Marissa Nalivenko, and she is a writer, director, producer, Emmy Award winning effort, and I presume more will be coming. Though it doesn't matter to her. It's about the content, and it's about the social change that some of the work can precipitate. And, when we look at some of our leaders, you notice, in particular political leaders or corporate leaders as well, oftentimes their children convince them that they need to, with their power, with their influence, change things. So I think it's a nice way that, you know, you're doing it. You are helping children reflect, learn how to communicate what they think and feel within areas such as race relations and I'm sure economic disparity and, as you said, scary things and braveness. And then they talk, the little girl or the son talks to dad or mom and says, hey, listen, you know, I think we should be more open about things like, you know, gay marriage, or we should really address racial strife. And then things might actually get through to that powerful individual who otherwise won't be so moved.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. It's helping kids find their voice. And, even the littlest kid can really make an impact and make a change. Right. So I love that. I love that idea, thinking that it could, you know, make an impact at that level.
I think of people like Senator Casey. I remember his daughters really influenced his mindset on a couple of huge issues that he's voted on. Same thing with former President Barack Obama, and the list goes on, you know, President Biden, their children, their grandchildren, oftentimes, you know, and every household, you know, our communities, if our children are talking to their parents and the parents are listening, oftentimes that innocence, that, you know, genuineness, that clarity that children have can remind us or show us what is right and what is wrong. And then we
can prioritize for sure. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's a great way to put it.
And you're really helping with that. And I appreciate what you're doing. PBS is wonderful. So. And yeah. I, you know, the next one will be what? The next focus on the kids talk.
Okay. So the next focus. So what we had just recently, maybe a month ago, put out the COVID special, mm-hmm. which I feel pretty happy about. But we also have a few more about family traditions that's coming out, and family traditions, family pride. We have one about scary things, and actually this was the first time we actually had a family who talked about the mother has a terminal illness, and that was extremely moving. On set, and this family, again, this was a mother and a daughter, had a very intimate conversation with us on set, and we're in the middle of editing it now, and so we're trying to find a good way to be able to share this story without it, you know, exploiting the family or really, you know, pandering. Mm-hmm. But we also feel like it could help a lot of families out there who are dealing with something similar. So it's being, you know, having this opportunity to be able to talk about these just huge, huge issues, huge, huge life changes in a digestible way for little kids, little 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds, and then all the way up to grandparents to be able to digest and be able to model and use to help out their lives.
Excellent. Excellent. And, do you see yourself branching out into anything else, or is this good for the time being? You're doing, I guess you would say these are documentaries. Is that where you want to stay, or you're looking at any other sorts of projects or outside of just within the context of children?
You know what? I really feel like I've found my little niche. I love working with kids, and I have been for the past 15 years. Before that, I worked at Discovery Channel. I worked on American Hot Rod. So that was like totally different side.
Yep.
I did some reality television. And so I feel like in terms of trying to check those boxes, I feel fortunate in that I have been able to experience a lot of different realms of the television and film world. I mean, really right now I'm focused on trying to give back, and not just with work, but I'm involved in the community, and I there's a film festival. I'm going to give you this little. I'm going to do a little plug because it's coming.
Yeah. I've
been working with a team at the and we're running the Northeast Pennsylvania Film Festival, and it's through the Waverly Community House. And for the past maybe 5 or 6 years, we've really been trying to get traction. But it's this year we have. Stephen Karam from The Humans.
Yeah, he's a Tony Award winner, right?
He is a Tony Award winner, and he has the film adaptation from his
play.
The Humans, yep. Yeah. So that's coming up this first weekend of April. So I'm trying to, I mean, I love being a part of this, right? And I love just trying to share this excitement and really try to help influence other kids and other, you know, college kids who might be interested in getting into television or writing, or I'm trying to just be able to be a role model and help others, because that's how I got to where I am, right? Like every step of the way there was a strong person really just pushing me and supporting me. So I think it's also very important to give back and hold that door open for who's ever coming next.
Beautiful. I think it's a good place to wrap up our conversation this go round.
Thank you. Sure.
No, thank you.
It was great talking to you, and I love your program. I love what you're doing. And I wish, you know, I wish you the best of luck too. Thank you for telling these stories.
Oh, thank you for saying that. It's my pleasure. I really enjoy it. Marissa Nalivayko, I'll see you out and about, maybe at the NEPA Film Festival at the Waverly Com. For those listeners in Manhattan and Philadelphia, it's not hard to find, and it's a quaint little part of the world, just about 2 hours away from where you are. Look it up online, the NEPA Film Festival. And Marissa, hopefully we get a chance to talk on the program again in the near future.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so. Thank you again.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
As I walk through this wicked world, searching for light in the darkness of insanity, I ask myself, is all hope lost? Is the only pain hatred and misery?
I'm not one for complaining, she says as she's about to complain, but villains just aren't what they used to be. I want a bad guy, not someone who flip-flops on where their moral compass points, as in more modern movies and TV shows. Disney is especially known for doing this. In their newest animated features, like Encanto and Moana, there's a distinct lack of a main villain, or if there is one, they're somehow redeemed in the end. They even made multiple film series giving well-known villains like Maleficent and Cruella de Vil tragic backstories to explain why they are the way they are. I don't want cop-outs or saved bad guys. I want my villains to be pure, unadulterated evil. Back in the days of Golden Age Disney fairy tales, the villains were easier to spot. They were usually grotesque, witchy women threatened by a young girl's beauty or magic. They would transform themselves, poison people, and even curse babies to reach their end goal, which was usually murder or power. In short, there was nothing redeemable to find in these people, or in some cases, creatures. They were evil for evil's sake, wanting only to gain power through any means necessary. And usually, those means were nefarious. Take, for instance, one of the most famous of pop culture villains, who was somehow also owned by Disney, Darth Vader. In 1978's Star Wars: A New Hope, we were introduced to this bad guy who fought our hero, Luke Skywalker. He is a masked, heavy-breathing figure who could be an alien, human, or a clogged air conditioner, for all we knew of his identity at the time. What we did know was how terrifying he was. While he was physically imposing and mysterious, it was his sadistic streak that chilled people the most. I mean, he started his day off by torturing a teenage girl and then blew up her planet right in front of her. The dude's sinister. And you would see this sadistic streak throughout the next two movies as well. I mean, kind of. George Lucas always had it in mind that Darth Vader was actually Luke's father, Anakin Skywalker, who ends up helping his son in the final film of his series instead of turning Luke to the dark side. Long story short, Vader is made into a sympathetic figure in Return of the Jedi. Then, over the next two decades, he gets his own tragic backstory through prequel films, novels, and comics, not to mention the numerous parodies, Saturday Night Live sketches, and internet memes that have further defanged and basically demasked the terrifying villain, who was once willing to blow up his daughter's home planet without a second thought. But then, our good friend Disney did something different. Rogue One, A Star Wars Story was released in 2016. It's a prequel in a long line of Star Wars prequels that takes place right before the first time we ever get to see Vader on film in A New Hope. He has a cameo at the end where he massacres an entire ship of rebel soldiers in one of the most horrific scenes ever shot in the Star Wars franchise. And it was freaking awesome. After years of viewers almost forgetting who the real Vader was, we see it plain as day in his savage use of his powers. Which now begs the question, does a backstory ruin a villainous character? Does the fact that Maleficent was brutally attacked as a young woman, shown in her origin movie, completely negate the fact that she curses Sleeping Beauty with an imminent coma as a baby? And I don't think anything that happened to Cruella de Vil would ever, realistically, give us all the green light to accept the fact that she wanted to skin a bunch of puppies. Huh. So maybe I was jumping a bit to conclusions when I said I needed a villain to just be some two-dimensional stock character. I think maybe I need more of a balance instead of just pure badness. While the unknown evil Vader I first saw in A New Hope will always give me goosebumps, it's interesting to note that with the full knowledge of his history, doesn't change the essential viciousness of his character. Especially when I watch him walk out of that fog-filled elevator in Rogue One, a pile of rebel bodies at his feet. It's honestly scarier to see that one human, no matter how good and righteous they could start out as, could fall so far. Maybe that's the point. I don't need a good villain, I just need a well-written character. And now maybe I can stop complaining. Meh, unlikely.
Trying to get on top, but it's never easy. Mastered my own luck, but it wasn't easy. Trying to feel alright around all these people. I try, but I'm just numb this time. Deepest cut, yeah, I can't feel. Find my grip on the steering. Say I'm not trying this.
Butterfly. Whiskey surprise and sweet lullabies, stumbling like an inebriated otter in the wild, getting in phase with my inner child. I saw a monarch butterfly a few days back. Spring is almost here. I can smell and hear it near. March into April lightly. And there you have it, episode 464 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, Marissa Nalavenko, Marnie Azzarelli, and these musical artists: Thelonious Monk, Faye Webster, 07, Elvis Costello and the Attractions, Haim, John Grant, Branford Marsalis, and Terrence Blanchard, 2. And of course, I would like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and do our best with this time. Take care of yourself and others too.